it off, take it in, take off all the thoughts of what we've been. Take a look, hesitate, take a picture you could never recreate. Got a song.
And welcome to another Sarcastic News radio show. I am so delighted to be here. My name is Justin Cross, and I am glad. I'm so glad to be here live at the Skid Row Studios in the heart of LA's fake Rolex district. I'm here with Sarcastic News contributors Chris Boley, Mark Hamelman, Michael Lorenzo Porter, and we will also be interviewing tonight very special guest, human rights activist and journalist Corey Hill will be joining us. First off, though, we begin with a segment called Fun Control. It says gun control. This happened a couple weeks ago, actually. The F is right next to the G on the keyboard, and I just...
Easy mistake.
I'm telling you, it happens. But anywho, it might as well be called fun control, folks, because apparently the U.S. people care more about Justin Bieber's newest tattoo, apparently an artist rendering of Selena Gomez, from what I hear, over the failure of the Senate to pass background check regulation. Now, that's right in a poll released this past week from the Washington Post and the Pew Research Center. Only 47% of respondents said that they were, quote, disappointed or angry that the Senate failed to pass background check legislation that would extend to gun shows and online sales. Mind you, prior to this bill going forward through Congress, 90% of Americans were in favor of it. And according to the Huffington Post, more people agree on background checks than apple pie, kittens, baseball, and child labor laws. That's actually true. And it's easy to ask, like, what's wrong with our government? It's a very easy question to ask, what's wrong with our government? But here's what I want to know. Has the media done enough on the gun debate? Now, I mean, what have they done well at? Here's what they have done well at, is coming up with puntastic headlines. Very puntastic. I was doing research for this, and I actually decided to contribute some headlines myself. So, to the gun control debate. This is what I'm contributing. First of all, I have here gun control shot down. Right here. Then I have gun spelled backward is NUG. Let pot, guns, and freedom ring. Secondly here, I have, or thirdly here, I have shoot first, don't ever ask any questions later. Then here I have the only silver bullet for a bullet is an empty Coors Light can propped up on a chair in your backyard. We have passing legislation against a gun wouldn't be fun, so go sit in the sun, you cowardly jackass senator. And finally, don't lose hope. New gun control bill to target machine gun, military-style, high-impact water pistols.
Those are keepers.
Those are good, huh? Thank you. By the way, we are going to, in just a few minutes, we're going to play a little fun game. We have the NFL draft today, so feel free to call in 800-893-9562. That's 800-893-9562. To Skid Row Studios, and we'll be taking some calls. You can play along with us on that game. I swear, though, with this gun control stuff, the question to me still remains, will we actually see real gun control reform? I don't know if you guys heard about this. Democrats in Colorado responded by introducing more gun legislation that would require domestic violence offenders to surrender their firearms, create a task force to study ways to prevent those with mental health problems from obtaining guns, And it would ban gun owners from obtaining a concealed carry permit via an online class. Because apparently, that's right, you can now obtain a degree in gun ownership from the University of Phoenix. You can literally print out a concealed weapons permit from Isuzu Pacific. Your parents, your friends, your family, they can all celebrate your accomplishments from the comfort. You can all celebrate your accomplishments from the comfort of your bedroom. You can attend your gun graduation in your pajamas, and yes, that's right, you can celebrate by firing your legal pistols wildly in the air. Now, I got to move on because today the five living presidents were together. Jimmy Carter, George Bush 1, Bill Clinton, Bush 2, and Obama. And they were all there to celebrate the inauguration of the George W. Bush Library in Dallas, Texas. And joining the event via satellite from heaven was Ronald Reagan, and via teleconference straight from the fiery depths of hell was Richard Nixon. Now, as many of you may know, the inauguration of the Library Bank brings back to light the controversial presidency of George W. Bush. However, Bush did admit earlier this week to CNN's John King that the library attempts to spin the president in a more positive light. Among highlights of the library include the minutes following. It's commentary of the minutes following 9/11, the days following 9/11, the weeks following 9/11, and the constant campaign to shape the public's opinion by mentioning that the 9/11 attacks. Also, in a bringing the band back together moment, the Bush Library will also feature monuments, pictures, and get this recorded commentary from big players from the most infamous events that include Hurricane Katrina and the Iraq War. In the Hurricane Katrina exhibit, former New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin actually constructed, this is true, a 12-foot-high monument of the city made completely from Hershey bars in order to signify, in his own words, a chocolate city. Keeping the theme of sweets in the monument, though, you can also see a chiseled nougat image of George W. Bush talking to former FEMA director Mike Brown. In it is a recording of Bush's infamous words, "You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie." I think we actually have a recording of that right now. You got that, Nick? Oh, here it is. Wait, that's not it. That's just crap.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
Roll that one more time for me. I like that one.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
24 goddamn seven.
Say FEMA?
I think he did. I think he said FEMA. A FEMA director. He sounded me like trying to do the Isuzu Pacific joke. And finally, today in sports, the NFL draft began just a couple hours ago. And unlike last year's draft, this year's is without much of the quarterback hype that was created by rising stars such as Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III. Instead, this year's draft is full of offensive and defensive linemen, otherwise known as fat guys. And to provide an example, the first five players drafted tonight, this is true, were over 430 pounds. Or, if you didn't know, the equivalent of a pregnant Kim Kardashian. Boom! And with more on the NFL and more analysis, we turn it to sarcastic news contributor Chris Bowling.
That Kardashian joke was brutal, Chris. It's really...
Because she's fat.
That's true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's only 1 month in. Give it some time. She might hit 600. All right. Well, so in the spirit of the NFL draft, I've prepared some questions, some know your NFL draft trivia that we're going to go through right now. So I've got five questions that I'm going to pose to you guys as well as our listeners out there in the broadcast universe. Are you guys ready for question number one?
Let's go.
Let's do it.
All right. We're going to start off real serious here with question number one. True or false? Mel Kiper's hair has its own Twitter handle and Facebook page.
Mm.
Mel Kiper being, of course, the broadcaster who's been covering the NFL draft since 1925, I believe.
This is Mel Kiper Jr.
Mel Kiper, oh yes, of course. Okay. Father, rest in peace.
He's a descendant.
I wanted to clarify.
All right.
So true or false? You guys have any?
I'm going true.
True. I'm going to say true.
True.
I'm going to say true. Yeah.
You guys are correct. And yes. A bonus follow up: the tagline of Mel Kiper's hair Twitter handle is 99% gel, 1% Mel. That's right.
Oh man.
All right. Question number two: the very first NFL draft was held in 1936, when 90 names were written up on a blackboard for all of the teams to choose from. The location of that draft was at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in what U.S. city?
Wow.
Are we going to get options, or are we just...
Yeah, the first one was...
Oh, no.
The first one was true-false, and as long as you didn't say, like, Mel Kiper's pubes, then I feel like you got that right, so... oh, God.
No, that's
tough.
Choices. So what U.S. city was the first NFL draft held in?
What was the year?
1936.
Oh, geez. I don't think California was a state at that point. So.
Columbus, Ohio, I'm going to say... probably wrong.
Incorrect. Any other guesses?
I'll say New York City.
Philadelphia was the city of the first NFL draft.
All right.
Gotcha.
It's been in New York for about the last 20 years now. And as a bonus follow-up, since moving to the Radio City Music Hall in 2006... prior to moving to the Radio City Music Hall in 2006, it was held at what Manhattan venue?
Mm. Ooh. the ESPN zone.
That's rough.
Think sports venues.
Is it a stadium?
Yes.
MetLife? Oh, Madison Square Garden.
Madison Square Garden. Okay. There it is. Very
that nice. That almost felt too obvious.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, are you even guessing on these, or are you just like...
I do what I did in high school. I just wait, and then I'm looking over my shoulder.
Yeah, we don't have video in this thing, so even your good looks can't carry you through here, okay?
Michael Porter takes a commanding lead after question two. Question three, which college has supplied the most first-round picks in NFL draft history?
Ooh, first-round picks.
First-round picks.
I'm going to say the University of Miami Hurricanes.
Any other guesses?
I'm going Penn State.
USC.
Justin Cross with the correct answer.
Really? Wow.
Yes, University of Miami.
Wow.
As the bonus follow-up, which college football program has had the most arrests of any college football program?
The University of Miami.
I'm going to go
correct.
Yeah, Hurricanes.
Supplying the NFL with a lot of high-quality individuals. All right, two more questions, guys. Question four. The NFL draft lasts for 7 rounds with approximately 250 overall picks. The other 3 major professional sports leagues of NHL, NBA, and MLB each have their own draft with a varying number of rounds each. I'm going to say 3 numbers, and you have to tell me which of those leagues those represent in terms of number of rounds in their draft.
Mm.
The 3 numbers are 7, 2, and 40. Those represent the number of rounds in the NBA, MLB, and NHL drafts. But you have to tell me which
first,
one is
Cross?
Which.
40, 12, and 7. I don't know.
MLB's got to be 40.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
That was
40
obvious.
Rounds in the MLB
yes.
draft, which was a recent move, actually, after their collective bargaining agreement.
Weren't you actually drafted?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I played for the San Jose Rivercats, single A.
Man, boy, like the first one was so easy. It was like a good, like, okay, we're going to compete.
Softball.
And now we're just sitting there like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, what do you got? Yeah. What do you got,
what do you
Porter?
What do you got?
It's a group thing.
Well, yeah, you guys are doing well. So you got MLB. Okay. So,
MLB's 40.
So then the other two are 7 rounds or 2 rounds NBA and NHL.
Ooh,
NHL's 2.
No, NHL is going to be higher. NHL's the medium one, the second highest one. Whatever you said, for 12, 14.
So you're saying 7 for NHL?
7, yeah.
That is correct. Yeah, 7 for NHL and 2 rounds for NBA.
Wow, did not know that.
Wow.
That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Go to hell, Porter.
All right, guys, one more question. The final one is, I'm going to say 2 statements, one of them true, one of them false, and you guys have to tell me which one is which. Number one, the college quarterback that threw for the most yards last season is not declaring for the NFL draft to instead pursue his master's degree. That's statement number one. Statement number two, there is a draft prospect that has never played a down of football in his life, but is trying to transition from professional discus thrower to the NFL. Which is true and which is false?
B. The discus thrower.
Yeah, that one's true. The first one's false.
A football player would never go get his master's degree.
No.
Trick question. They're actually both true.
What?
You're the worst.
The first one is actually Nick Florence at Baylor, who is RG3's replacement, threw for the most yards in college football last year and will not be going to the NFL.
Wow. Hey, who's this discus thrower guy?
His name is Lawrence Okoye, and he's actually the British record holder in the discus.
Wow.
He went to the Olympics in London last year and got like 10th, I think.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So. All right. Well, very good, gentlemen.
Nice stuff. All right. Well, we will be right back here on the Sarcastic News Show. We got a great interview coming up with Corey Hill. Stay right here on the Sarcastic News Show. And we're back here on the Sarcastic News Show. That's the Mowglis, San Francisco. I like that song. It reminds me of love. We're back with this is a segment we like to call Group Think. Kind of like the football game, except we're going to talk a little bit of politics here. And I want to go and start out with this one because we did, as I mentioned in the opening monologue here, we were talking about George W. Bush. His new library in Dallas, Texas. Currently, he does not have the highest approval rating among Americans. Regardless of what you thought about him when he was a president, like right now, he just doesn't have the highest approval rating. My question to you guys, my question to the squad here, is, you know, will history be kinder than currently? You know, right now, as we look at it, the Iraq War, Katrina, they kind of hang over his head, but will we look back on his presidency and will we see it nicer than current or not so much?
I think so. I mean, as he gets older, people will start to forget about him. I mean, that's the only saving grace, I think, for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think time will definitely be an ally for him because it'll obviously sort of blunt people's memories a little bit in terms of, you know, some of the negatives of his administration that they recall. So, you know, I think, you know, he's never going to be the most popular president, but I think over time, you know, people will generally look at him a little bit more favorably than they have at points in the past.
Mm-hmm. It'll be really interesting to see because, you know, he is considered, you know, one of the worst presidents, you know, that we've ever had. But, you know, time, you know, like you said, you know, it has a way of making people forget. You know, we forgive people in America. That's kind of what we do.
But let me jump into this. With the Iraq War, for instance, I mean, yeah. I think that's something that, it was such an emotional war, I feel like, for the whole country. On the heels of 9/11, we jumped into Iraq. And even the people who were fervently against it had trouble speaking out against it because of the passion, because of what happened with 9/11. And that was such a reason for really getting into the war, right? Now, we're not that far from it, and you know, there's still troops in the area. So, you know, do you feel like we will look back on specifically the Iraq War in a worse way than we do now? I mean, don't jump all in.
No, it's a good question.
That's a great question. Yeah.
It's a good question. I had to make up for that monologue. Jesus
Christ. I mean, no one's downplaying the severity of, you know, what happened in the war and the after effects, and, you know, we're still feeling that. I just think that as a whole, you know, it's never going to be as intense as it was while it was happening. You know, people forget, and there will be a new generation of people that are told about it. They didn't live it. I think right now, it's the way it is because we all went through it and we saw it happen. But there will be more people coming along that won't have gone through it, and history will be kinder to him, whether he deserves that or not.
I want to say this real quick because. Obviously, Boston was last week, and it obviously brought people back a little bit to 9/11. Was not nearly as severe, but this still the idea of terrorism. I will say though, there is a difference between 12 years ago and now, in I think how we handled it a little bit more. It was I feel like the country kind of knew what to do a little bit more in situations like this. There was less finger pointing and more. Especially maybe it's just because, I mean, the city of Boston responded amazingly to that. And let me go and just jump and ask you guys a little bit about that. How do you compare 9/11 or do you even compare 9/11 to what happened in Boston?
I think they're different. I mean, you're looking at domestic versus foreign terror, isolated incident versus a very planned out, you know, event by a group of people. So in my mind, they're different. I mean, they're both terrorism, but. I think they should be handled very differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the aftermath, or at least certain portions of the aftermath, will be similar in terms of how it affects, like, for example, marathons and other, like, events of that nature. Like, as after 9/11, obviously you saw how that impacted, like, airport security. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, a lot of it was sort of unnecessary. I mean, at least in my opinion, because it was sort of like a knee-jerk reaction. You know, it's like, oh my God, you know, we can't allow liquids on planes anymore.
Right.
And so, you know, unfortunately, I think probably the same thing will happen to, you know, marathons or festivals or other events. Like, we'll probably have that same knee-jerk reaction and maybe try to go a little overboard in terms of security and checks and balances and all that. And, you know, I hope we can still have events like that and not have them be like overcome by
total lockdown. Just, yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Just real quick on Boston, because you and I are both runners, and the fact that it seems like more people want to go and do the event next year, in order to kind of stand up to that. And again, I think that speaks to us being able to have a situation like 9/11 and then respond differently to it. I want to go on gun control though for a second. 90% of folks, 9 out of 10 people, were in favor of a bill on this particular style of gun control, which is background checks on people with mental handicaps and gun shows. So, you know, that when that doesn't pass, right, 9 out of 10 people don't agree on most stuff. But when something like that doesn't pass in the Senate, what's the reaction to, I mean, why aren't we more outraged that didn't happen? I mean, because again, we as a community, as a country, we tend to agree on that one thing. It's kind of surprising. Why aren't we more outraged with what happened?
Well, oh, you want to go? I mean, I think we are, but you know, there are a lot of distractions. You know, people are, you know, they're informed and they know what's going on with gun control, but I think as a whole, they feel like maybe, you know, what they say doesn't matter. You know, it's been so long that, you know, maybe they just feel like
we're just numb to that. Huh?
Yeah, we're just numb. Like, oh, great, there's another stall in the process. Is it ever going to, you know, and you lose interest, you know, after a while. And that's sad, but that's kind of what happens.
Is it because do we feel powerless in a way? I mean, the NRA clearly had a huge influence on it. Whether you're for it or against it, they had a huge impact on it. Are we just numb to that kind of stuff? Or is it just like, hey, you know, like Kim Kardashian's ass looks huge this week. Like, let's, you know, that's more interesting, you know?
No. I think Porter made a good point, because I think there is a disconnect there between like the way that people feel and how sometimes that like manifests itself through like legislation or through the government.
Yeah.
And why that is, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe it's because of all the red tape and you know, interest groups and hurdles that you have to overcome in order to like, you know, get something like that passed. But it definitely seems like the feelings and opinions that people have on certain issues, especially gun control, are not exactly like, there's not legislative equivalence, at least at this point.
Yeah.
And maybe there will be over time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it's sad though, because like how big of a tragedy do you need? You know, yeah. Like, you know, Newtown, you're looking at 20 plus. I mean,
kids,
you know, 9/11, you know, you're looking at thousands. And then of course we jump into Iraq and boom, you know, we're in there, yeah. You know, whether it's right or wrong, but it's yeah. Doable, like legislation. There's red tape and everything, but I mean, it's almost like how many young kids have to die for this to happen.
To your point, Mark. I mean, I wanted, because we talked a couple weeks ago about legal, you know, pot legislation and gay marriage. And if you think about 10 to 15 years ago, those things were almost off the table completely, or you know, they were kind of fringe groups almost in a way of like, oh yeah, right. You're not gonna get, you know, just because you play hacky sack a lot doesn't mean that you're gonna get your thing passed, you know, and. But, you know, now look at it where we are. You know, certain states are legalizing it, both, you know, with gay marriage and pot. And do you feel like maybe 15 years down the road, we'll have some of those reforms that, I mean, they're common sense stuff. We're not talking about, you know, truly, you know, taking people's Second Amendment right away. But mm-hmm. Do you think that there'll be sensible gun control 10, 15 years down the road? Or is it something that just gets shelved and never really happens?
I mean, it's possible, you know, guns are a big part of, I mean, our whole culture. You know, we grew up watching, you know, people, you know, movies, they're everywhere. It seems like it's one of these things that over time we'll, you know, we'll look back and say, wow, that was really dumb. Like, why didn't we resolve this sooner? But like I said, you know, people are distracted by, you know, the celebrity news and whatnot, because it's easily digestible. You know, this is... you know, layered, and there's, you know, differing opinions. People just, they tune out.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if we go and we look 10 years later, you know, and if it was, you know, something that was agreed upon, that would be great. But I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah, I want to, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, and I know we got a fun movie game coming up. Definitely, guys, call on 800-893-9562. Porter will be, he's got a fun little movie game with us. So we want audience participation on that. But, before we close out here on Groupthink, I want to ask you guys, just go around the table and we'll go ahead and start with Bully here. You know, in the news, we've got terrorism, we've got guns, we've got the economy dominating the headlines, but there are other things like healthcare and the economy and the environment. I always find it interesting to find, you know, to, you know, what is the biggest issue that stands out sociopolitical that really needs to be dealt with? Like, what is it in your opinion? Go ahead if you want to take it away, Bowie.
Ooh, and thank you for choosing me first on that one. That's a heavy one. Well, I mean, yeah, it's tough to get.
Or is it recyclable condoms? Which one is it?
Wait, you mean they're not already recyclable?
You just turn them inside out.
That's what I've been doing. Guys, I got to go. I hate to sort of say guns again, but I mean, I do feel like that's sort of the issue of our time currently, at mm-hmm. least. It's the one that's been getting a lot of attention. I'd say it's probably the one that needs the most attention, you know, based on obvious recent events of the last 1, 2, 3 years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's definitely the one that jumps out at me. You know, I can't think of any others right now that I think need a similar amount of attention as that one.
Cool. What do you got, Mark?
It's a little disarming when you think of like all the buildup of nuclear power. When you see like North Korea, we almost take them as like a joke, you know, mm-hmm. like yeah. One or two people die here, and it's a tragedy, and it really is. But then, you know, we got North Korea like saying that they want to kill millions of people, and it's like and, you know, it shows up on like, you know, the funny podcast. yeah, I mean, it only takes one time, you know, one yeah. crazy person with a switch. So, I mean, sometimes that needs to be looked at. You know, you think about 9/11. I mean, who was talking about that before it happened?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that scares me a little bit. I still want to make fun of North Korea when I can. But, you know, just those almost rogue governments, you know, getting hands on nuclear weapons.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Porter, what do you got?
You know, the economy's, it's a big thing. You know, I mean, we see people every day who, and I mean, not in particular, you know, us, but, you know, there are people who have a lot and there are people who have a little bit. And I think the farther and farther you go down that road where that gap is not moving or changing,
yeah.
you know, people kind of, they harbor this disdain for those people. And I think that's dangerous. You know, you have it set up to where, you know, the people on top stay on top and the people on the bottom stay on the bottom. I mean, that's, it's problematic. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you see that with, you know, the disparity of wealth in a lot of different countries. Mm-hmm. Certainly ours is above average compared to most, but still, I mean, even being the, you know, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, it's still an issue. I have to go with education because I feel like that is base. That to me is something that if you don't have an educated, you know, population, then you set up for things like, you know, economic disparity, and you have issues like gun control, but in healthcare, which we didn't mention, but that's a huge thing. But I think it starts with having an educated culture, and that's really, you know, that is one thing that we're kind of behind the curve on when it comes to, you know, when you look at countries like China and Japan and some of the Western European countries. But now I will, we will go ahead and we'll lighten things up a little bit. We got a movie game coming up next with Michael Lorenzo Porter. So stick with us right here on the Sarcastic News Radio Show, Skid Row Studios. All I am is a man. I want the world in my hands. I hate the beach, but I stand in California with my toes in the sand. Use the sleeves of my sweater. Let's have an adventure.
The minute that my left hand meets your waist, and then I watch. your face. Put my finger on your tongue cause you love the taste, yeah. These hearts adore everyone the other beats hurt is for. Inside this place is warm.
And we're back. We're back, baby, on the Sarcastic News Show. We are back. I'm about, I'd say 6.8 fluid ounces through a Red Bull. I didn't go sugarless. I'm not scared. But before we get into our musical game, we have a quick caller. Who's on the line? Is that Schmidt?
This is Schmidt. What's up, boys?
Schmidt. Is this Andrew Schmidt?
Yes, it is.
Oh, man. Calling from Jacksonville, Florida. Is that right?
The one and only.
Oh man, how's it going?
Good.
I'm sure you're blown away by the show thus far. I'm sure you just called in to compliment us, or did you want to weigh in on one of our heavier topics here?
I completely missed the topic, but I do want to congratulate you on the show.
Thank you.
Like less news and more sarcasm, but that's all right.
Oh, man.
But yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, that's fine.
Very very proud to hear you boys in the air.
Thank you very much. I mean, this is internet radio doesn't get bigger than this, so.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
But let me go in while we have you on the line, Mr. Schmidt.
Sure.
I know you. I know your style. We were talking about it's just a minute ago. We were talking about some of the biggest issues. You know, what I was going around the room and saying, hey, what's the biggest issue? What's the biggest socio-political issue that we have on the agenda? You got, you know, obviously in the news now, terrorism, guns. But you know, there's healthcare, education, environmental issues. What is it for you?
Well, I did catch a tad of what you guys were talking about, and I think you guys kind of touched on the quality of education in the country. I think that's important not only in the education of children, but the baseline education of those who most people are getting their opinions from. As a medical professional, I think a lot of the people we get most of our opinions from are complete and utter idiots and clinically insane. Mainly the Fox News folks. I just think there's a lot of just bad opinions going around, a lot of hatred going around, a lot of stuff that people waste too much time listening to.
And you're, just to clarify for the folks, you are a doctor, you're a 420 doctor, is that correct?
What doctor?
You're one of those guys that hangs out on Venice Beach with the green jackets, right? And just says, hey, your vision's screwed up, right?
No comment on that.
You know, what? So how about healthcare, though? I mean, you're in the medical field. How big of an issue is that?
That's obviously a big issue, and I try not to hold too strong of an opinion on it just because there's enough people with opinions on it, and I just kind of try to do my own thing. But I did get my master's in public health and also emergency medicine as well. So I think I know some things about it. In general, I think that's obviously a huge issue right now. The only thing I'll say about it is I'm very proud that we have a president who has done something about it. Whether it's the right thing, who knows? It'll probably change in 10 years. The fact that someone had the balls to do something about it and make a step in the right direction makes me happy.
There you go. There you go. Mr. Schmidt, thank you so much for calling in. Did you have anything else you want to weigh in on?
No, just want to say hi to my good friends.
Thank you so much.
Boys.
Thank you for tuning in, and feel free to call back anytime and weigh in on the issues. That's Andrew Schmidt. Thank you so much. Calling us live from Jacksonville Beach, Florida.
Bedtime on the East Coast. You guys have a good night.
All right. Have a good one, man.
See you,
bye. It's great. That was a live caller. I mean, he was live. He wasn't dead. But most of our callers are dead. It's like we rigged the election, you know. All right. So we have a fun little game here before we get Mr. Hill on the line. Go ahead and take it away, Mr. Porter.
All right. You guys ready for a little trivia?
Yeah.
Yes.
Great. Good. So let me just tell you how the game works really quick. I'm going to describe a true event, okay? And then I will give you four choices, A, B, C, D, and you're going to have to guess which movie takes its source material from the true event. Okay? So everybody listening at home, keep score, and I will let you know how you're doing. Okay. So,
dude, hold on. Nick, do you have music?
Please? Yeah.
Do we have music?
We got the music ready? There we go.
Yes.
All right.
Lighten it a little bit. There we go. Where's okay. Rod Roddy? Where's Rod Roddy right now?
Sequin jacket.
He's on his way. Okay, so.
He's calling in. He's calling on the Jack in the Box hot mess phone line from hell. This is Rod Roddy.
Yeah, he was a great man. He go easy on old
is
Rod.
Is he alive?
Oh, no.
He's dead?
Rod's dead.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Hanging out with
Rod's
Nixon.
Been dead for years.
All right, so on that note, true event number one. Project Mercury was the first human spaceflight program of the United States. It ran from 1959 through 1963 with two goals, putting a human in orbit around the Earth and doing it before the Soviet Union as part of the early space race. What film, based on a book by Tom Wolfe, borrows heavily from the story of Project Mercury? Is it A, Space Cowboys, B, Armageddon, C, Spaceballs, or D, The Right Stuff? What do you guys got?
Well, Spaceballs was a biopic.
Right.
Are we supposed to say it now? Yeah, I'm going to go with The Right Stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go Space Cowboys just to be different.
Space I love the Cowboys.
Name. Yeah.
Okay. So, question one, the correct answer is D, The Right Stuff. Justin, you are in the lead.
That's right. Hey, and I just want to let callers know if you want to call in real quick, 800-893-9562. 800-893-9562.
All right. True event number two. Okay. True story number two, I guess I should say. This film centers around the real-life story of an American journalist in El Salvador during the Salvadorian Civil War. Is it A, Salvador, B, Platoon, C, Full Metal Jacket, or D, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 2?
D, all the way, D.
Bill, you're going to go D?
Sure, yep.
Okay.
I'm going to go B, Platoon.
Okay.
I'll go Salvador. Just
Salvador?
Seems right.
Okay. Cross, Bowling, you guys are wrong. Mark? You are correct. It is A, Salvador.
Right. Was it Bill and Ted 1?
No. No, it was not. Okay. True event number three. Okay. Which of the following films tells the story of Christy Brown, disabled Irish writer who could type only with the toes on his left foot? Is it A, The Expendables? B, My Left Foot?
Sorry.
C, Silence of the Lambs, or D, Aliens?
This is amazing.
I'm going to go B, My Left Foot.
Yes, me as well.
B is correct.
Wow.
Okay, question four.
Wait, is that really correct?
Yes, it is correct. It's wow. My Left Foot.
Okay, all right.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Two for three, baby.
Yeah, Cross, you're in the lead. Question four. Based on the life of Olympic hopeful, who was a long-distance runner, who also lived in Oregon and died young in an auto accident.
The Avengers.
Yes. Is it A, The Avengers? B, Prefontaine? C, Gattaca? Or D, The Grand Illusion?
It's B.
I will also
go Everyone's
B.
going B?
Yes.
B is correct. It is Prefontaine. Life story of Steve Prefontaine. Okay, question five. This controversial film tells the story of middleweight boxer Reuben Carter, whose conviction for a Paterson, New Jersey triple murder was set aside after he had spent nearly 20 years in prison. Is it A, Raging Bull, B, The Boxer, C, The Hurricane, or D, Cinderella Man?
I'm going to go Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure 2. Oh, it's not on
there.
Oh.
Yeah, that was...
Go well. Who? Somebody else.
If it's the same person who named the movie Salvador, I'm going to go the movie The Boxer.
I'll go.
Okay, you're going B.
Yeah.
I'll go Cinderella Man.
Okay, Justin.
It's The Hurricane. It's a Bob Dylan song.
That's right. C is correct. It is The Hurricane. Reuben Hurricane Carter. True event number six. Okay, this movie details the life of eccentric historical figure Howard Hughes. Okay, is it A, How High? B, The Aviator, C, The Rocketeer, or D, Django?
The Aviator.
Aviator?
Yeah.
Yes, The Aviator is correct. Okay, last question here, true event number seven. Which of the following award-winning films details the life of a young Che Guevara? Is it A, Capote, B, Silver Linings Playbook, C, Syriana, or D, The Motorcycle Diaries?
I don't think it's Silver Linings Playbook. I'm going to roll that one.
You sure about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Let's go.
I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen any of these movies.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Your chances are great then. Yeah,
I'll say Syriana just because I have no idea what that one is.
Okay. That's going to be Capote.
Okay. You got Syriana? You got Capote?
I'll go Capote.
You going Capote as well? It's D, The Motorcycle Diaries.
Damn it. Wow. Yeah. All right.
So I believe Justin won.
Yeah. Just don't add it up. Don't do the math.
We're not adding it up. Justin is the winner. Thanks for playing, guys. Everybody, thanks for playing at home, our worldwide audience.
Porter, that was good stuff. All right, guys, we got Corey Hill coming up in just a minute. We'll be right back here on the Sarcastic News Radio Show. Here we go, and we are back on the Sarcastic News Show. Oh, Reuben Carter action, Bob Dylan. Guys, good stuff so far. Porter, that was good stuff. It was knowledgeable. I can't believe I at least tied in a movie game. But I think I'm around like two other people who don't watch movies. Yeah.
I try to make them all about current events because I know you're on top of your current events. So
yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. And joining us via the Jack in the Box Hot Mess phone live from San Francisco, California, human rights advocate, journalist, very funny man, very smart man, Corey Hill. You on the line, Corey?
I am indeed. And I'm glad that you didn't describe the phone as calling from hell, so thanks for that.
No, that would...
Didn't give him the old Rod Roddy treatment.
Yeah, no. Live from San Antonio, Texas. Hey, so Corey, go ahead and... I want to go and ask you, we were talking about this in the group think section here. We were a little bit talking about guns and everything else. What do you think, first of all, what do you think like the Obama administration could they have done any more to get this passed? I feel like they sent Joe Biden out on a motorcycle. He showed off his tattoos on his arms. I thought that was enough, but, could they have done anything more?
I don't put the fault of this failure at all, at the feet of the Obama administration. I feel like in the context of what's possible in our legislative system, the Obama administration did as much as they could. I mean, kind of to hint at who I think is at fault, I mean, I definitely think it points to a pretty strong dysfunction in our legislative process that with the upswell of support for sensible gun laws following the latest in a long line of tragedies from gun violence, even then, when there's this huge upswell of support for it, you can't even pass a bare minimum of sensible gun laws. And I think, to me, you can't really lay that at the Obama administration's feet at all.
Do you feel like, is this just a demonstration, a classic demonstration of how special interest groups like the NRA can influence politicians? Or is there any other element to this? Is there a stubbornness that goes beyond that? Or is this situation unique in any way?
I mean, I think it's a combination of factors for me. I mean, the NRA is indeed powerful, and it again, go back to the dysfunction of the process. I mean, we're all pretty well aware that we have pay-to-play legislative system where folks in the House, folks in the Senate have this fundraising process that goes on all the time. It's not like, oh, I fundraise a little bit and then I'm in office and then I'm going to get to the work of legislating. So the fact that it requires so much money to get elected to these higher offices in the U.S. means that, you know, folks like the NRA are going to have a huge sway because of the money that they have. But I think that particularly with gun control, it goes beyond simply the NRA is powerful. Because if it were simply the NRA is powerful, but the mass majority of Americans are outraged about gun violence and have very strong feelings about the causal effect between having so many firearms and such free access and the staggering amount of gun violence that we have compared to the Western world, to me, that's more the salient factor, more so than, the sway of this interest group. If they were, really powerful and the public, was strongly opposed, I don't think they would have the sway that they have, but that's not the case. We have a public that is tragically misinformed about gun violence and how they view that relationship.
How much of it is our fault? I mean, 9 out of 10, before this vote happened, 9 out of 10 people favored sensible gun legislation, such as background checks for the handicapped and for folks at gun shows. I mean, that's 9 out of 10 people. Like, you couldn't even get dentists to agree on, like, brushing your teeth. Like, that's ridiculous, you know? And it's not, we don't even have an excuse like sports to fall back on. There's no sports. Like, the Lakers suck right now. So, you can't even fall back on that as an excuse. Like, why are we not more outraged that this didn't go through?
Yeah, it was pretty high support. It was like doctors, supporting cigarettes in the 20s and 30s. It was nearly unanimous.
Right.
But it was, I think that, it's interesting that you look at these different statistics on the swell of support immediately after this latest tragedy. And then as soon, as recently as the 23rd and the 24th, you start to see drops of below 50% support for it. And you see that, less than half of people are angry that it didn't pass. And I think that the politicians who were going to bat for this had a very strong feel. We like to joke about, idiot politicians or whatever, but these people are not stupid. To get elected into these offices, you have to be very savvy. You have to be able to manage people and money. So they're looking at this trend. A lot of the folks who are getting money and who are, being leaned on by people who are against gun control probably very presciently looked at these trends for how Americans respond to tragedies and how quickly we drop off in really thinking through and processing what this information really means. They probably kind of read it in the cards that 6 months from now or 3 months from now, something else is going to happen. People are going to forget about it, and they're not going to really pressure us anymore. And the facts have borne that out. So I think it's one of those cases that, we as Americans do bear some of the responsibility because we haven't been applying pressure in a meaningful way about gun control. When you're looking at statistics like 11,000 people a year killed by gun violence, and there's still massive percentages of folks who oppose the most common sense and most basic gun control legislation, then you have to lay some of the blame at us. Theoretically, it is a system where we are calling the shots, and to a certain extent, in terms of applying really vocal pressure to subjects, that's the case. And the representatives realized, hey, 3 months from now, the pressure's going to let off, and guess what? They were right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. We were talking about this in the group think, and we just have another minute or so to go. But if you think about the legislation, you know, you think of them, like, say, marijuana laws about 10 to 15 years ago. You think about gay marriage 10 to 15 years ago and how far those movements have come in a fairly short amount of time. Do you feel like this, you know, with what's happened in Newtown, and even though this did fail, is, you know, is the country going to rise up? Are we going to keep putting pressure, or is the NRA too strong? You know, and they put the kibosh on this, and really are the efforts are, no pun intended, but are going to die because of that.
I'm extremely hopeful that the trend in at least having some change in the conversation presents an opening point. To me, I mean, I think that the fact that you're looking at where the support lies for gun control, where it doesn't lie, and you're seeing a lot of this fear-based response in Republicans, you know, 29% of them are glad that it died. It's in the Deep South. It's in this, you know, percentage of the population that is really having a reactionary, fear-based response to external events that they don't have control over. And the idea of, like, having, you know, guns and asserting your power that way is very attractive to them. But I think that this thought process and this mindset is going away. And you see that with stuff like the marijuana laws, and you see that with stuff like the you know, gay rights. I'm very hopeful that this trend will eventually make its way to the subject of guns. And I, you know, I think that maybe it won't be this year, maybe it won't be 2 years from now, but I think that we've reached a turning point. And I didn't, you know, I'm not overly sensitive to this recent setback because, you know, it might not necessarily happen overnight.
Absolutely. Now, Corey, we got to head out, but I know you, you're a freelance writer, you're a journalist, and a human rights advocate. If you could just tell us a little bit about some of the work that you know, people may be able to read some of your articles and material. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. The most recent piece I've done was for the East Bay Express, which is a Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area weekly publication that was talking about fracking, which I think anyone who lives on the planet, and specifically in California, should be really concerned about. It's coming to California. It's going to have worldwide impacts. And I would encourage everyone to read up. You know, I mean, I'd be glad if you read what I wrote, but, you know, read something that anyone wrote about fracking and really get informed about this really dangerous and dirty
fracking. Fracking, by the way, is not farting on crack, just so you know, just so folks know out there. That's not what fracking is.
Oh, yeah, hydraulic fracturing.
Well, thank you so much, Corey. We got to run, but we'll definitely have you on again. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right, you guys have a good one.
Thank you. And that's that about does it here for the Sarcastic News crew. Mark Hamelman, any final thoughts?
My first show. I don't know if it's going to be my last, but thank you very
much. Yeah, it will.
It is, actually. And a good day to you.
Yeah, no, you guys, thank you so much. Bully, any final thoughts?
No, great show, great guests. I really enjoyed what Corey had to say there about some of the issues. And yeah, thanks for having me.
Bully is the best dressed man here. Michael Porter, we got to run. But thank you guys so much for joining us right here on the Sarcastic News Show. You can catch us on Twitter.com/SarcasticNews1, Facebook.com/SarcasticNews1. We have a new and improved website, sarcastic-news.com, and check out Skid Row Studios, 800-893-9562, to call in on a show in the future because we don't have any more time. But thank you so much for joining us. My name's Justin Cross. Have a good night.
See, I've been here for 28 years, patterns spread beneath these wheels, tattooed lines beneath our skin, no surrender, my Bobby Jean.